Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on affiliates for details. Happy Resurrection Day. Happy Easter to everyone out there. Man, we have a very good show in store for you today. Oftentimes, this topic brings about contentious and heated debate. That is why I want to solicit your feedback. Let me know where you stand on this very simple question. Should we pay our college athletes? So sound the alarm, get on Facebook, Twitter, send out emails and text messages, call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, that number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter. That's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. I don't know if you heard this or not, but a mystery woman snuck inside of Google and left a book and a letter. Now, this woman claims that Google is inside her head and making her do things. Quietly gained entry into the company's Silicon Valley headquarters last month, leaving behind a book and an angry letter for the company's co-founders, reported by the police. Now, her name is Vera, reportedly. She's a self-described filmmaker and former, stripper is not a good word to use. I say she was a former entertainer. She walked in undetected into Google's main office on around March 14th. And spent a few minutes there, and an administrative staff remembered, returned to her desk and found a book in Russian, as well as a letter addressed to the two founders. And this is what somebody told Reuters. It didn't make any sense, Wiley said of the letter. They were the ramblings of somebody who, with some kind of condition. Google contacted the police 4 days later after reviewing the security camera footage and found that Svechina had breached the inner offices of the world's largest internet company by walking in behind a visually impaired employee. Police did not know the current whereabouts of this young lady. She was 37 years old, who was last known to be living in San Francisco. By the way, she has not been arrested or charged in this case. Also, something that's interesting about Walmart these days. Now, Walmart has begun testing an online grocery delivery service in San Jose, California. Now, a company spokesman said that the world's biggest retailer had been rumored to be considering dipping its toe into online grocery delivery for the past few years. Under the name of quote-unquote Walmart To Go. This test allows customers to visit Walmart.com to order groceries and consumables found in a Walmart store and have them delivered to their homes. Products include fresh produce, meat, and seafood, frozen, bakery, baby, over-the-counter pharmacy, household supplies, and health and beauty items. Now, no other details were immediately available, but the online grocery business has been proven difficult to succeed in the given the perishability of fresh food and the industry's small profit margin. Now, if Walmart decides to stay and expand in this online grocery delivery business, its competition would be Peapod and Amazon.Fresh. Now, we are partners with Amazon, for full disclosure. And so the groceries accounted for 54% of the company's total U.S. revenue in the year ended January 31st. And then, I don't know if you heard this or not, but this kind of struck me kind of as odd, I would say. Now, University of Connecticut star Kimball Walker didn't surprise anyone when he announced that he would forego his senior year with UConn and enter into the 2011 draft. He did, however, shock people when he admitted that just 2 weeks ago, at the ripe young age of 20, he finished reading a book for the first time ever. Okay, in case I came in static covered or you didn't hear me, I'm going to say this one more time. He admitted that just weeks ago, at the age of 20, he finished reading a book for the very first time ever. Now, it was reported that in a recent interview with Sports Illustrated, Walker says he went through high school and college without reading an entire book cover to cover. What's even more surprising is the fact that Walker is actually graduating with a degree from UConn a year early. Last spring, Walker approached academic counselor Felicia Crump and asked her if there was a way he could earn his sociology degree before entering the draft the following year. Walker was required to double up his course load and take classes during the summer in order to graduate this spring. For an independent study course, Crump suggested that Walker read William C. Rodman's $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete, which turned out to be the first piece of literature he completed. How ironic, huh? Walker is slated to graduate next month, and he plans to finish up his coursework in the next few weeks and take a few online classes. He would also need to complete an internship as well, which he will probably conduct with the team that drafts him in so that he may finish his degree. Now, so it seems like to me that Mr. Walker has been through college and in high school, and by this being his first time reading a book, is this type of education worthy of a college degree? I just can't put it past me for someone to go through college without reading a book. It startles me. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk about March Madness and May Sadness this month. And so the moment of reflections will be about March Madness and May Sadness, but I read an interesting article from this website called imoutragednow.com, imoutragednow.com, and it reads as follows. Here we go. 68 teams, 3 weekends, 1 big winner, the NCAA. With a nod to the March 9th post on his blog, NCAA may have looked the other way and allowed teams to play. Now is a good time to examine college football brother, college basketball. In the subtitle, this article says, Pump and Circumstance. It reads, in April 2010, the NCAA signed a 14-year, $11 billion deal with CBS and Turner Sports to broadcast the NCAA tournament from 2011 through 2024. $11 billion. That kind of cash buys a lot of basketballs and sneakers for the elite student athletes that make it to the tournament. Too bad more of that money isn't funneled towards helping them actually graduate from the schools they help promote through the college sports media complex. Despite the NCAA's avowed rules and policies to ensure the academic commitment of student athletes and to increase the likelihood that they will earn degrees, last year the overall graduation rate of Division I basketball players was only 64%. Even if we do not include those few superstars who left early for the NBA, well over a third of these college hoopsters never walk across the stage to collect their diploma. So that's why I want to talk about today. Should we pay them? Should we pay these college athletes that we know the data says that they're not graduating? So the question I want to pose to you today, and I want to get all of the wise people out there in the audience today to kind of weigh in on this topic. So when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take some calls, and I will solicit, as always, the wisdom of my co-host, Jima. So be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today, we want to ask the simple question, should we pay college athletes? Now, so I'm going to solicit the feedback of my dear friend and co-host and darling wife, Jima. So, Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, I want to go back to the point where I was getting ready to introduce my moment of reflection. I want to talk about this UConn player. And so my question is simply this. How could one simply go to college for 3 consecutive years without reading a book?
Well, most of the time, assignments are letting you know where you can get the answers from that's going to be needed for a test. Unless he took any literature classes, he wouldn't have to necessarily read a book. So it's possible, obviously, because he's living proof of that. It's possible.
So how much credibility or validity would one put on a degree from a Division I university, Division I institution, if a kid comes out with a degree and hasn't read a book? So I understand it.
I'm pretty sure that there's probably more that have not read a book than what we know about. It's just amazing that he actually admitted to it. Now, for those of us that are readers, we find that to be appalling that one could be almost graduating from college and this is the first book that you have read in its entirety. Now, that doesn't say he's never read before. It just says this was his first book that he read from cover to cover. And so, you know, maybe he just hadn't found a book that you know, grabbed him that made him want to read it all the way through.
Now, how genius was it for this counselor, Felicia Crump, to get him to read this book?
That was completely genius, completely. Because of, you know, the plight of where they are, where athletes are right now in Division I and II and any other division where they go, I think that was just great insight on her part as a counselor. She gave him something that he would read that was of interest to him.
Do you think it changed his outlook now, or his perspective on his education?
Well, only time will tell. I was somewhat impressed that even before this year had approached, he had gone to her to find out what did he have to do to be able to graduate, that he could go into the draft this year. So at least there was some thought already into it in terms of life after basketball and making sure that he had a degree. So, I have to give him some credit and kudos for that, for even thinking past the right now and thinking about what do I have to do to get a degree. And the fact that he has taken those extra classes and went and doing things online and seems as though he's really serious about making sure he has that degree.
Which is I have to agree with you 110%, which is an amazing component on his part, because, today's topic is March Madness and May Sadness, and as I read earlier, that 64% of our athletes are graduating from college. And so, which brings me to my next question, is that if we have this staggering statistic about the kids that are entering college and not completing their education, and all of the dollars and millions of dollars that are being made off these athletes, shouldn't they get paid?
Are you asking me should they get paid?
Absolutely.
And my answer is absolutely, they should get paid. They should get some sort of compensation. And I know the argument is, well, they're getting a free ride. They're getting their own scholarship. So everything they need, is provided for them in terms of a full scholarship, housing and food and those sorts of things. So, of course, some's going to say they're already getting paid because they have a scholarship. But they're also doing something for that university in return for that scholarship. So I think on a small scale, because most people in college have a job. I know I did when I was in college, because the scholarships and even financial aid just didn't take care of my day-to-day life. So, I think they should get some sort of stipend, but it should be tied to how they're performing, not just on the field or on the court or whatever, but also how they're performing in class. So there should be some sort of stipend that they should have, because they're not providing for their clothing, they're not providing, for those sorts of things. So I think it should be. I think they should receive something.
So I'm trying to emphasize. So they're going to school, not work, right? If they're good enough where they think they should get paid, why shouldn't they just go pro instead of going to college?
Well, because the NCAA has made it difficult for them now to go straight out of high school into the professional ranks. I think the only sport now that you can go straight, if my memory is correct, is of the top three sports in terms of football, basketball, and baseball. I think baseball you can still go, but you would be going to the minor leagues. But I think they put an age limit now on professional basketball, as well as a two-year commitment to have played in college in football. So the NCAA is making sure they still going to get their money, because now they're putting these sorts of restrictions on the players.
Well, so when you say that college athletes should get paid, are you strictly speaking about college basketball and football, or are you saying all college athletics should get paid?
Well, and that's a tricky question, because there's two things with that. Those are the two sports that we hear the most about, even as it relates to graduation rates. And then you break that down also by race, and then you break it even further down by gender. So those are the two that we hear the most about, because those are the two that generate the most revenue for the colleges. So because those are the two that generate the most revenue, for these institutions of higher learning, then I think that that's why we hear so much about football and basketball. Now, does that mean because I play softball or tennis that I don't have the same needs as a football player or basketball player? Possibly, because of the, I would probably say, stereotype of who goes to college on a full football scholarship or who goes to college on a basketball scholarship. And tennis, it seems, has had the connotation of an elite sport. So you may not need financial support playing tennis as much as you would playing football or basketball.
So, okay, so now we're talking about student athletes, right? They're students and athletes. So I'm going to put that in quotation marks. And we're saying that we should probably spread the wealth around and pay our college athletes because they got a full ride, which their education is paid for, but they are generating revenue for the school. So it sounds like to me that they should probably get a percentage of the overall revenue, therefore, just like the NBA does. I think they close the deal where they're getting around about 57% of the overall revenue, so they get a portion of that. So my next question then is, what about the people that major in arts and science? What about people that major in computer science? Why shouldn't they get paid?
Well, what do you mean major in arts and science and major in computer science?
Well, I mean, you have students that are playing sports that major in all type of degrees, and they're doing all these other things. And why not pay students in the computer science department that are contributing to the research into the engineering facility?
Well, here I don't know that that's a viable option because we're strictly talking about sports. And with sports, we're talking about what is it that these young men and women are doing where they're actually generating millions of dollars for the colleges as well as for the coaches. So I think that in that we're just talking about athletes and not just students, although I hear you, student athletes, that's what they say, with the wink, that they're concerned about them as students, but we've seen and heard numerous stories of athletes over the years who've talked about how they couldn't major in certain fields because their coaches would tell them that that would take them away from football. And so, they were limited or pushed to major in a certain career field because the work would be easier and it would be less intrusive on their football practice or basketball practice.
Okay, we're going to go to our phone lines now, and we're going to take some calls. We have a caller 5972. What's your name, and where are you calling from? You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Hello, caller 5972. Okay, all right, they hung up. All right, so we'll continue the conversation here. So my next question really is about them graduating, right? We kind of talked about whether they should get paid and the different what that means for all different athletes. And so this whole question about them not graduating, or this percentage about them not graduating, well, whose responsibility then is it for them to graduate? We know who's making all the money off of the students' back. So who should bear the burden of them graduating?
What do you mean? Who should bear the burden?
So I here I am. I got a full ride scholarship, and I start take you to the Final Four. We win a championship, right? And we do that for my freshman year, my sophomore year, and then my next 2 years, I don't do too well. I end up falling behind or whatever, and not. And here I am in my junior year and getting ready to drop out of school. So at that point, who should be responsible for me making sure I cross the finish line when it comes to getting my degree?
It's a joint responsibility of the individual himself or herself, that being the athlete, the sporting coaches of who they spend so much of their time with, the counselor that everybody has in college, that's someone that they that's working them through what classes they need to be taking and all of that. So it's a joint effort. Now, as a coach, all I can do is say you need to go to class and you finish your work, and I'll provide you with the tutor to help you do that. Now, if I'm coming to college solely because I know the only way I'm going to get to the next level is I have to put these 2 years in here, then that's all I'm focusing on is being the better athlete. The student part is secondary in my mind. So that's a conscious decision that that athlete has made.
Wonderful. All right, let's take another call. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, Pat, it's Dell. I'm calling because I'm biased on this situation.
So what's your comment?
My dad, my godfather is a coach, so I see how basketball athletes come into school when they're recruited, you know, by these big colleges. They think solely their mission is to play basketball. They're not worried about their education because they think they're going to the next level. So I think should they get a percentage? No, because they're picked out of, you know, one out of how many ever students that get a scholarship ride to go to these D1 schools where it costs $100,000+ for them to get that education. So I think their sole purpose should be focused on their education, but it's not. They get there, they get lazy. They do pick the easy classes because they think at the end they're going to the league, so they really don't need to learn anything. But then on the flip side, I've seen students who take full advantage of their scholarship, where they double majors. I've seen basketball scholarship dudes like come out with a double major with a 3.8 GPA. So I think it's really up to the families, like the parents and the students themselves, to like think of it as an opportunity, as for real, a blessing that they are picked to go to these schools.
Outstanding. So what I hear then is that they are getting compensated. You know, I talked about should they get paid. They are getting compensated. They're getting compensated with a full ride. A degree is worth over $150,000, sometimes in some cases $200,000 or $300,000, depending on the school or university they go through. They get all books and tuition and room and board paid, free food, traveling, experiences. So in some ways, what I hear is they are getting paid.
And they get stipends.
Yeah,
so, I mean, they're better off than a lot of these students who, me for one, I paid myself to go to college, and I know it's hard. And if I could switch places with an athlete and get a full ride, it would have been great. I would have came out of school with no bills.
Outstanding. So that begs the question. I want you to tell me your story, because you ran into similar situations like this, right, about getting funding for school, right?
I did.
You want to talk a little bit about that story?
Are you talking about the financial aid story?
Yeah.
The financial aid story is one of such that I was an out-of-state student paying out-of-state tuition. So those out there know what I paid a little bit higher than what in-state tuition was. And I was a little bit beside myself one day as I was standing in financial aid office, and they had lost all of my paperwork. And so I'm having to file all my paperwork again. And there I see football players in the financial aid office. And I'm trying to figure out, why are they standing in line in the financial aid office and got full scholarships? So I was concerned enough to ask the question, and I can't recall what the answer was so long ago. But I do remember seeing that, and I couldn't understand what would they need financial aid for if they're on a full scholarship and they have all these other things that I didn't have access to as just a regular out-of-state student paying out-of-state tuition. So, yeah, there's some parts of the argument that because they do get all of those things that they are on some scale getting paid, but some say it pales in comparison to what the schools and the universities are getting paid and what some of the coaches are getting paid, that it fails in comparison to that. So it could go either way. I just think what we have to do, what the system has to do a better job of, is making sure that as the athletes are coming in to college, that they're really being prepared. And so that course goes back to our education system just in general, making sure that our students, with athletes or not, are prepared to go to college. And unfortunately, that's not really happening either. So,
okay, let's go back to our phone lines again.
Hello.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name and where are you calling from? Last four, 1940.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Renee, and I'm calling from Richardson, Texas. I also, I'm a former student athlete, and I also attended the University of Oklahoma. So I didn't play sports at Oklahoma. I played sports at University of Arkansas. So I saw a lot of the things that your co-host was speaking about with being in a financial aid line when I didn't have a athletic scholarship and seeing those athletes. But I can also speak from being a college athlete and the stipends that you would receive, depending on your sport, really was not that much money. So I hear the things, and I guess it also depends on the school that you go to, but getting $50 a week or maybe even $25 a week, that doesn't go a long way when you have other necessities. I also think that there has to be training, but I don't know if the lifestyle of a high school athlete versus a collegiate athlete is totally different. I think that when they come in as a freshman, there has to be some sitting down with mentors, with possibly former athletes that can talk to these young men, that can talk to the ladies, because it's a totally different lifestyle. You're basically becoming a rock star overnight. So it's incumbent upon the coaching staff and, again, mentors to teach these young men that are possibly coming from lower economic family to middle class that have never been exposed to the type of things that they are now exposed to in a collegiate level. At the University of Oklahoma, I think they started to do that, but even as you transcend into professional, we see that our rookies getting in trouble. There has to be someone sitting down with these young men that are receiving all of these things that are just thrown into their laps and make them good stewards of what's been afforded to them.
Outstanding. So I want to pose another question back to our caller from 5972. She mentioned that the fact that she don't think athletes should get paid. So I want to ask this simple question. Well, let me kind of lay the groundwork first. So you have an athlete and you have a business major and you have someone that's possibly majoring in music. And so the business major, at the end of the day, he goes through his semester, and in summertime, he can go work for Wells Fargo Bank and make as much money as he wants to. The musician can go down at the end of every night or at the end of summer and get a gig downtown and play for some nightclub if they wanted to, or even just start up their own any type of music CD if they want to. But the athlete, on the other hand, is restricted by the NCAA from making any other money while he's in college. Do you think that's fair?
Hello?
Yes, caller. And 5972?
Yes, it's me again.
Do you think that's fair?
No, I don't think it's fair, but then, like I said, just from experience with my godfather being a coach for a college basketball team, they ran camps during the summer, and the college athletes had the opportunity to assist with coaching in those basketball camps. So they made money during the summer, and then maybe it depends on, the school and what sports you play. But as far as basketball, they had the opportunity to make extra money during the summer with resting. They might not have been able to play coaching the young kids during the summer. Like, they had the opportunity to make extra money.
But
like
it's restricted on by how much they can make, though, by NCAA rules.
Right.
So is that fair, though? I mean, that they're putting these restrictions on these college athletes. They got a full ride. So did the person in the business department. So did the person in the music. They got a full ride too, because they're you know, good at their craft. You know, as a business major, as an engineer, he was good at his craft. So they get a chance to go in and they can work for, you know, the big Googles in the summertime or take internships. But an athlete, on the other hand, can't do that. And so I think that's unfair in a lot of different ways, not to mention, and I want to kind of shift the conversation a little bit, but not to mention all of the royalties that the NCAA is making off these kids' back. For example, the jerseys that they wear, the merchandise that they make, and all of the video games that they make, all of these things are made on the backs of these college athletes. And this, you're not even a part of their tuition. So do you think they should get paid at least some of that money?
Yeah, and I think I'll make a video game after them. Then I think, you know, yeah, they should be able to make some money off of it. But like I'm saying, like, if I could trade places with one of them, you know what I mean? Like, one of the basketball players who go to Duke or go to one of these big universities, just that 4-year education right there alone is preparing me for my future, regardless if it's basketball or not. It's just opening so many different doorways that I think personally that these athletes are not even, you know, taking advantage of, because they think and they live real unrealistically, because I've sat down and talked to them. They think they're going to the league. Well, how many players does the NBA take a year, you know, in the draft? Like, come on. Like, they're not really taking full advantage of the opportunity. Instead of preparing for their future, they're preparing to go to the league.
Outstanding. Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. Today, we're talking about college athletes and should they get paid. So we've had some great discussion around the fact that a caller said that they shouldn't get paid. We had a caller say that they should get paid, and we had someone that's on the fence. So I want to maybe perhaps give another spin to this thing. And so, Jim, I want to bring you back on the line for a moment here, and I want to ask you that if we're talking about athletes getting paid and the fact that they are already getting some type of compensation, shouldn't that be enough? Shouldn't we close this debate because they are already getting paid? Why even introduce a monetary value when we've already determined that they're getting paid through college education?
Well, here's why we bring it up. Because every year, when you look at the amount of money that the NCAA makes from football and basketball, just those two sports, you mentioned earlier the contract that they signed for basketball with Turner Network, and how just this past March you were able to see all those games on all those different channels. And then you look at the BCS, the bowl games, and how by the third week in the season of football, everything is about your BCS standing. Your whole life is based on where you fall as a football player at a Division I school in the BCS. And the amount of money that colleges get for making it to one of the BCS bowl games, millions of dollars, $20 million, $50 million, however many millions of dollars that these colleges get that they put back into brick and mortar. By that I mean building larger stadiums and larger training facilities. And as your previous caller stated, why not put some of that money back into those players in terms of preparing them for what if you don't go in the first round or the second round? What is your plan B? What, you know, let's make sure that, you know, we've mentored you. If you have a college student that's playing football or basketball and they are parents, so for these 4 years that they're giving you, they can't go out and provide for their child because they have no income. How do we help with that situation? So, you know, using some of the revenue, not just to build bigger stadiums that seats, you know, record numbers and where it looks really great on television and greater training facilities that they're in more than they're actually in a classroom. Let's do something for that person. Yeah, we're educating them we're providing them an opportunity to be educated because we've given them the scholarship. But they got their scholarship to come play football. They didn't get that scholarship to go be in what you were stating earlier in the computer science department. They didn't get a full scholarship as a computer science major. They got a full scholarship as a football player or a basketball player or a soccer player or a baseball player. That's what they got the scholarship for. So because that's what they got the scholarship for, then although they want to call them student athletes, their primary focus is making sure they're prepared week in and week out on the field. And that's why they're provided with their tutors secondary to help them to, you know, to stay up on their studies.
Interesting perspective there. So I want to bring Renee back on the line because Renee actually was an athlete herself. And so, Renee, I want to ask you, how did you feel being recruited and then playing as an athlete? Did you feel that your primary responsibility was athletics, or was it primary to get your education? Renee, are you still with us? Are you on mute?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. So the question was, basically, did you feel more or less that you was there for your athletics, or were you there for your academics?
It was twofold for me. I played sports in high school as well. So bringing home good grades was number one. Being a good athlete was secondary. But in any institution, I mean, you have to be passing. You have to be making good grades. I came from a family of educators, so bringing home good grades was paramount. You know, and being a good athlete was secondary and just helped in areas that my family couldn't financially provide for me in some areas. Even with the scholarships, the athletic scholarships, I still had to work. You know, my family still had to send me care packages and all that stuff because I was out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't a football player, so being a woman athlete, that's a whole nother dynamic because we didn't get the monies that the male athletes received. Also, football, big money maker. When I had my games, my home games, the football team was away, but when the football team had a home game, they made sure my soccer team didn't have a home game because they wanted the football to be the focal point, so we always had away games. So it's a lot that goes into that money-making mechanism, but as and it also comes from, you know, home, your home life, your parents, just what you were instilled with as a young adult as far as your priorities, being an athlete versus an academics.
So what would have happened if you would have injured yourself playing soccer and now you no longer were eligible to play? How would that have affected your academic portion of the scholarship?
There's two different things. An athletic scholarship is strictly that, athletic scholarships. And it's really incumbent upon the athletic director in the athletic department as to whether you keep or lose your scholarship. I was blessed in that my scholarship was at the University of Arkansas, but when I transferred to OU, they didn't have collegiate soccer. They only had intramurals. So I then studied hard and began getting academic scholarships and minority scholarships. So I just looked for another avenue.
So there are opportunities as an athlete to get an academic scholarship once you're there. So, you know, Lord forbid if something happened to you. But if something happens to you, you don't lose your scholarship, because it sounds like to me we emphasize the fact that we're going to get paid for going to school, and this is a mechanism for financial support of the student. But if he falls short in his athletics, then he could potentially lose his scholarship and potentially lose his opportunity for an education.
Correct, unless you then start again. There are other opportunities there. There are different, you know, your Department of College and Arts and Science, Rhodes Scholars. There are other opportunities there. It's just incumbent upon the athlete to research and know. And now, I mean, like you said, anybody can get hurt, and they should have a plan in place. And that's what I did as an athlete.
Wow. So, you know, so that begs the question about when people argue the fact that, you know, they're getting a full ride scholarship for the athletics, and then which is kind of misleading, sounds like to me, because if you're there to get, you know, to play football or to play basketball and you get injured, then that opportunity goes out the window. And so you lose any opportunity that you had. And a case in point was Pro Throw at University of Alabama. He broke his ankle or his leg or something, and you know, he was on his way to the NFL and had a very promising career, but all of a sudden, you know, it went out the window. So, you know, that availability was no longer for him. And so, you know, I was watching Brian Gumbel's Real Sports the other day, and he's now working at a bank. Someone that has a potential to be an NFL star is now working at a bank, you know, making, you know, pretty much, you know, an average salary with all that talent. And so I really believe it's really misleading for people to believe that the academic portion, the monetary portion associated with the scholarship really benefits the athlete, although they do have that opportunity that it could be, it could go out the window all in a blink of an eye. So finally, Jim, I want to talk one more thing here. I got one more question for you. So what's wrong with the NCAA exploiting? Let me say, that's a hard word. I don't want to use that word, exploiting. What's wrong with the NCAA leveraging the students' unique physical abilities for financial prosperity?
Well, I don't know if there's anything wrong in terms of how you stated the question. The problem is that the NCAA seems to be on the larger side of the pie than most of the athletes that they are involved with. So I say most because it covers all sports, and a lot of schools can fund some of their other sports through the monies and revenues that they receive from football and basketball. So having said that, there's some benefit, you know, that you have other activities going on at your school because of the revenue generated football and basketball program. But having stated that, I just think that if they were doing a better job of persuading the athletes, I think that the push for them to get paid would push back a bit. But since they're not doing a great job of graduating these athletes, then the argument becomes that you've got to give them something, even if it's while they're there, I believe when we were on the Brian Gumbel show, a suggestion was they leave with something that you know, for every athlete or whatever, that they leave with a pot of money, so that they're leaving with something in their hand as opposed to nothing, because we're not all going to get drafted. But see, that's what they sell us, though. They sell these young men and their families and these young ladies' families that pipe dream that you have what it takes to go pro. So I believe you, Coach, because you've traveled all the way down here, down this dirt road from the big city to come see me. So I believe you, Coach, when you tell me I have what it takes and all I got to do is work hard and I'll be rewarded hard. How many of those athletes have heard that conversation? How many of those athletes' parents have heard that conversation from a recruiter? And at the end of the day, we work with recruiters. Our job is to sell you the biggest ticket we can sell you. I'm a salesperson. I'm selling you on my university based on what I can give you, based on what we've given to other players. I'll bring up all what, you know, how many championships we have, how many players we've had to go to the pros. You know, I'll give you all of that, and I'll put you in that category. So you will come in to my campus day one thinking the next whoever that is, if that's from University of Alabama, University of Oklahoma, University of Miami, University of wherever. You come in thinking you're the next one coming out of there. You're the next Michael. You're the next Emmitt Smith. You're the next Troy Aikman. You come out thinking that. So everything you do is based on the fact you're going to be the next. So your mind isn't focused on education, because I've sold you the ticket that you're the next one. They've got to do a better job when they go out and recruit these players to not only give them that ticket of you're the next one, but just in case something happens, because things happen in life, let's make sure that you're taking the classes that you need to get a viable degree, not just a degree, but a degree you can do something with.
Interesting. So, that sounds good, you know. But isn't this just training them for real life? I mean, you know, if they go out and work at a Fortune 500 company or a Fortune 100 company, the CEOs are making 65 times as much as the employees. So it's the same thing, right? I mean, they're getting paid a college degree, and the NCAA is making millions. Isn't that the same? Isn't that just training them for a real world?
That could be one argument. But I think the difference is that. When I go work for the company, I know what exactly that company is expecting of me to do. And I'm not sure if all the times when we go out and we recruit these young men and young ladies in the environment that they're in, that we're really telling them what's going to be expected of them when they get there. I'm not saying that they're not. I just don't think it's happening in its totality. And it's because of that we have some athletes that walk out that they get to be 20 and it's the first time they finished the entire book. Or you hear the story of the ones that can't read and you're trying to figure out how did you get not only out of college, but how did you get out of high school? How did you get out of elementary school and not being able to read? So all through their lives, some athletes, the ones that are considered to be the next great one, they're pampered. And they're given all these things. And so the expectation on them is to do good on the field, excuse me, and everything else will take care of itself. You won't need to know how to do this because you'll have somebody doing it for you. So they don't pay attention in certain types of classes. And so their mind has already been convinced, you know, and let's just say they make it to the pros and they get in 2 years later and they bust a knee. Now what? You 2 years in, you're 24, 25 years old, and your career is over before it really gets started. What do you do with that? How have you prepared for that? How has the college prepared you for that? Or did college just prepare you for the bowl game, for the BCS?
So whose job is to get them ready for that then? I mean, because when you look at these little kids, and I mean, even, I'm in the state of Texas. I mean, I'm in the great state of Dallas, Texas. You know how we do it in Dallas, and we play football at the high school level like it's at the pro level. And so they start grooming these kids at four, five, 6 years old, and they start putting them in a position so they could be stars, right? Academics are very seldom highlighted at elementary school. And so they ride this this superstardom all the way through the system. So at what point should someone say, hey, wait a minute, this kid can't read. I don't care how fast he is. So whose job is to do that? It's not the college athlete coach. It's not the NCAA's fault.
Right. I agree with you on that. And that's why I said earlier that it's a shared responsibility. That child ought to be able to at some point tell somebody, I can't read. That parent should tell the next teacher class that he goes to that my son can't read or he has difficulty reading. And I'm pretty sure that the amount of time they spend with the coaching staff, somebody on their coaching staff, whether it's junior high or high school, knows that this young man or young woman has difficulty in reading. Somebody knows that. And so that's why I say it's a shared responsibility. At the end of the day, I am ultimately accountable for myself and the decisions that I make. And so I got to, you know, hold myself responsible and accountable and make sound decisions and speak up for myself. But when that's not the fashionable thing to do, then I'll just ride it out because somebody somewhere told me that I don't have to read. Somebody will read it for me.
Mm-hmm. So let's revisit the initial question. So real briefly, should college athletes get paid?
The short answer to that is yes.
How? What's
several
the vehicle,
ways.
The mechanism for them to get paid?
Outside of their college education that they're getting, that maybe at the end of their time there, if they get a degree, they get a set amount. If they don't get a degree and they're just done with their eligibility, they could get a certain amount. If they end up going to the league, maybe they won't need that, or maybe they put that towards, you know, a scholarship in their name to another athlete or something. There's a way to compensate them and to show them some recognition for the time that they spent at that university. Now, as I stated, you know, even in the summertime, I think the one in college said they can get jobs in the summer. Very true. And like you stated, there's a limit on the amount they can make. And it's also a limit on what hours they can work because a lot of times if they're on campus in the summer doing summer workouts. They're practicing. So, you know, if their time is going to be limited at whatever job they can go to, but it's an option. And so if it's important enough to them, they'll figure out a way to try to earn some extra money, which is why you have so many things going on the table, because some of them come from such dire straits that they need to send some money home to take care of that child they didn't have when they were still in high school themselves. And so it's just, you know, that they make it too hard for these young men and women to provide for themselves and their families. And so then they have to resort to doing things that the NCAA has deemed to be an infraction. And so, but you don't give them any recourse, though. It's like a young man whose grandmother died and the school, some boosters or a parent sent the child the ticket to get home to the funeral because the family couldn't afford for him to go. And then everybody gets in trouble. But, you know, how unsympathetic is that? That we can't even buy our athlete a ticket, a bus ticket, not even a plane ticket, a bus ticket home to his grandma's funeral. That's horrible. But that's an infraction according to the rules of the NCAA.
Well, you know, I'm going to have to agree with you on this particular issue. I think they should get paid. I think that we should at least revisit the contract mechanism in which all of the student athletes are involved in. I think that we should at least look at something outside of the scholarship and along with the merchandising that comes with them selling DVDs and video games off of these young athletes back. So, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Ashima today and the fact that I think we should, and most of the callers today, I think we're all in agreement that we should be paying our college athletes. So I want to thank to all the listeners for tuning in. and you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.